It's time for Twig this week in Google. We're going to talk about the Instagram mess. What does it really mean? And Microsoft steals Santa from Google. Google retaliates, and we get the strangest message from Santa ever. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 177, recorded December 19th, 2012. Hello, cutie pants. This Week in Google is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Twig. And by Ford. Featuring Bliss, the blind spot information system with cross-traffic alert and active park assist. Check out these available features on the 2013 Ford Fusion and 2013 Ford Taurus. And learn more at Ford.com/technology. This is Twig, This Week in Google, the show that covers the Google, but also the cloud, the Twitter, the Facebook, and today the Instagram. Gina Trapani is here, founding editor of lifehacker.com. She's, of course, a blogger at smarterware.org, a programmer who's written todo.txt and ThinkUp. And I bet she's pretty happy. We're going to ask her about the new Twitter policy. She is joining us from San Diego. Hello, Gina.
Hello, and brand new co-host of All About Android.
Oh, yeah, it's public now. We can tell the world.
Yes, I'm so excited.
We're really thrilled. Excited. Yeah, the founding host, Eileen Rivera, got a job with Google, which I think causes her to be recused. She couldn't cover anything that had to do with Google. So that pretty much eliminates her on the Android show. So we got Gina, though. I think that's great. In fact, you'll add the developer's perspective, which is fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I can't possibly replace Eileen. I know Eileen started as sort of a labor of love, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a show she wanted to do herself, and she's done so amazing. I'm not going to replace her, but I'm really honored to have the opportunity. And I never thought I would do a podcast, and now I'm doing three. So I'm not going anywhere. Folks in the chat room, I'm not leaving.
Oh, yeah, they were worried you might leave this show. You better not.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
But we cannot replace you guys.
We wouldn't allow that to happen. No.
No, we want more Gina, not less. More Gina.
Well, hopefully you won't be sick of me once I start doing All About Android.
We're thrilled. And I know Jason and Ron are really thrilled to have you on board. So you don't start till next year.
Right. I start January 8th, I think, is our first show.
Perfect.
Is my first show.
Next year isn't so far off.
Not so far off.
In fact, I think this is the last show of this year for This Week in Google. Next week is a best of episode. Day after Christmas, and then the week following, we'll be here. I'll be here, but you guys won't. It just turns out that you're all busy. It's okay.
Sorry, Leo.
It's okay.
I'm sorry.
Jeff Jarvis is here from the City University of New York, where he teaches journalism. He's also, of course, an acclaimed author. His latest book, Public Parts. His blog is at buzzmachine.com. And from Search Engine Land, Danny Sullivan. We love having Danny on. Absolutely the most astute observer of search, has been doing it for, when did you start? It was Search Engine Watch when you started. When did you start that?
'96.
Wow. There was no Google in '96.
There wasn't any Google in '96.
What did you cover? Alta Vista?
What's that? It was Alta Vista. It was Magellan. It was Lycos. It was Galaxy.
Wow.
It was a mess.
Galaxy.
So much easier now. It's Google and Bing.
Google and also RANs.
And Yahoo occasionally.
Yeah. Hey, I like, we talked about this last week. I think Marissa, you know, it's like a train pulling out of the station where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're starting to gain a little steam on this Yahoo train. The new Flickr app is great.
Oh,
not as good
yet. If only
yet.
Something had happened to cause them to only something could really inspire people to want to use.
It's the problem. You can make this great app, but everybody's using something else. They're never going to switch over unless something happened.
You need some kind of an instant
kind of mess up.
Scandal or change or something.
Instigate. Instigate some Instagram. Unfortunately, the Android version isn't quite as feature-rich as the iPhone version, which is spectacular. I'm sure we'll catch up soon, though, on the Android side. So Flickr, but the Flickr released a photo sharing app that shares to Flickr. In fact, I renewed my Flickr Pro because of this. Yay. I've already posted something. One of the nice things about the Flickr app on Android, like many Android apps, you can choose the camera. Once you take a picture, it has something very Instagram-like, a series of filters along the bottom. And you got to figure the program.
Yeah, but you can turn them off in settings.
You don't have to have them. But I like, you know, the filters are nice. You could take a really boring picture of cables and turn them into something lovely and abstract.
Filters are like the Cool Whip.
It's Cool Whip. It's Cool Whip.
What's Cool Whip?
It's a la mode. Not what's Cool Whip. It's Cool Whip.
Yeah, it's
Cool Whip.
Yeah, it's an artificial chemical addition that we get.
It's a la mode. Hey, you know, there's a lot of photographers who are doing quite well with Cool Whip. Don't knock Cool Whip. So we talked about this last week, but the reason it's germane, it's almost as if they planned it, is Instagram kind of put a foot in its mouth this week, announcing new terms of service. And the New York Times report was the one that I thought was most complete. The CNET kind of got it wrong. And I think, unfortunately, CNET said Instagram wants to sell your photos. And that became the story and an easy thing for Instagram to deny.
Yeah.
Right.
No, we don't want to sell your photos.
Although, technically, they could.
Well, but Nilay Patel pointed out in The Verge, and Nilay does this, he's real good at analyzing terms of service because he is, in fact, a lawyer. He pointed out that, you know, the old terms of service were much more open-ended and gave Instagram a lot of rights, which they just didn't assert. So the new terms of service, they became more explicit. But the things they asserted were kind of scary. Things let me read you some of these. Now, they've actually they've backed down, haven't they, Danny? This is maybe... So- Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that always confuses everybody, this is the same problem with Facebook, is you have to license your photo or your content to the platform you're using so that they can replicate it for you in various formats on various servers. So that part is, you know, is okay. But to then use your likeness on the flower barrel would be wrong.
Jenna Wortham and Nick Bilton wrote about this a couple of days ago. And their summary, now, again, this is the old terms of service. Instagram has not issued revised terms of service, but they said, all right, we're going to back down. Instagram can share information about its users with Facebook, its parent company, as well as outside affiliates and advertisers. I'd be shocked if they weren't doing that. Of course, you could star in an advertisement without your knowledge. This doesn't mean they're going to sell your image, but and I think it's somewhat like Facebook sponsored posts. This is the quote. You agree that a business or other entity may pay us. This is why people thought they were selling photos. But I didn't think that was going to happen. May pay us to display your username, likeness, photos, along with any associated metadata and or actions you take in connection with paid or sponsored content or promotions without any compensation to you. I could see why people were a little miffed about that. But Facebook does something very similar, right? Mark Rotenberg said that the use of a person's likeness in ads could run into state laws. He's with the EPIC, Electronic Privacy Information Center, could run into some state laws limiting the use of person's name or likeness for commercial purposes without consent. This is one that bothered me. Underage users not exempt, although Instagram says people must be 13 years old to sign up for the service. The new terms note, if a teenager signs up, they're agreeing that a parent or guardian is aware that their image, username, and photos can also be used in ads. Bad enough you're advertising to kids, but to start using their images in ads, come on.
But so they're saying that these teenagers are letting their parents know about this, this terms. Right, so they have to put that into for COPPA, right? So they have to, that's their way of sort of saying, this is part of our terms of service. The user, you know, the teenager agreed that they'd let their parents know because, you know, we're not going to let them know.
Right.
And believe me, my 13-year-old totally reviewed all this stuff with me and got my permission, and it was all sorted out. And I said, you go right away. Go ahead.
This one really bothered me. Quote,
actually, you know what he said when I mentioned this last night?
What?
He said, I get to be in an ad? That's pretty cool.
Exactly.
Am I going to make money off it?
No, you don't get paid, But he get to be in an ad, and most kids would go, yeah, that's cool.
He was totally not bothered.
No, my kids neither. Quote, you acknowledge we may not always identify paid services, sponsored content, or commercial communications as such. Now, Twitter does. That bothers me a lot.
That's just wrong.
Content creator, right? We all have that, you know. That's like the golden rule, right? Is you let people know when something's an ad. That's the thing that really bugged me more than the other stuff.
Which isn't really a term type of thing. It's just potentially a violation of some advertising laws and certainly best practices. And but it's like, wow, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I expect to see the word promoted or sponsored next to things that are ads on Facebook, you know, that it says promoted or sponsored. On Twitter, promoted users are labeled as such. When in search results, promoted tweets are labeled as such. I expect that on blogs. I expect that in all sort of media experiences. This is the thing, like if Leo likes, stamps.com on Facebook, and I see an ad that says, hey, your friend Leo likes stamps.com. Yes, that's an endorsement, but that's also like Leo, that was an action that Leo took on the service. He's my friend. So for me to see it feels like, okay, you know, I mean, it's getting surfaced because this brand presumably paid for it to get surfaced, but that doesn't feel as bad to me as it not being labeled.
Yeah, seem to be a couple of differences. First of all, Facebook, as you can see here, puts it under a column that says sponsored. They also only show me likes from my social graph, from my friends. So if here's Anil Dash liking Facebook developers, for instance. Now Anil did not do an explicit endorsement of Facebook developers. He liked that page. Liking means a lot of things, by the way, in Facebook terms. It does not mean you like it. It means you associated with it in some way. But Anil is not getting – that is an implicit endorsement that Anil maybe did not want. But at least it's only going to Anil's friends, right? Instagram's not saying that. Instagram's saying we could show it anywhere, anytime. And if it's me, I don't want that. I don't want Instagram using my image in endorsements.
There's a bunch of issues here. There's a whole raft of issues. When I was at Time Inc. and started a magazine, a wise editor there said, listen, the rule is really simple. The reader should never be confused about the source of content. If an advertiser paid for it, you say it. That's it. All these rules simple. We have just come down to that.
Yes.
It's that simple. And so it's an ethical issue of transparency. Number two, the FTC has ruled that bloggers, for example, that do not reveal not just getting paid, but getting freebies for things, could be liable for not revealing, not being transparent about influence on them. And number three, using your likeness in an advertising context is way no without your permission, right? And I've seen magazines that got in this trouble where they used some celebrity's photo from the magazine in an ad as if the celebrity were then endorsing the magazine, and they get zapped by the FTC and they get sued in court. And I happen to find in a certain, book here.
It looks like Public Parts by Jeff Jarvis.
On page 64. It was a 1902 case involving young Abigail Robertson's likeness on flour barrels were pasted there without her consent. And the New York Court of Appeals declared at the time that there is at present no right of privacy known in the law.
Wow.
This was a key moment here where they used her likeness in a commercial context and she had no right. The judge said that, hold on here a second. The so-called right of privacy, as the phrase is just founded upon the claim that a man has a right to pass through this world if he wills without having his picture published, his business enterprise discussed, his successful experiments written up for the benefit of others, or his eccentricities commented upon in either handbills, circulars, catalogs, periodicals, or newspapers. And he said you couldn't stop all this because then you'd have to stop newspapers. That was the beginning of a discussion of right of privacy. And what evolved out of that was the idea that you can't have your likeness presented as if you endorse without your specific approval. And that's not in
the news
context.
Well, how does Facebook get away with this? Because Facebook's doing it and has been for some time.
Well, that's part of your agreement with Facebook, though.
Pardon me, Danny?
That's part of your agreement with Facebook, because it's somewhere to be buried in the same kind of...
So I did explicitly say they could.
Well, yeah.
Somewhere
you didn't say no.
Well, and you can opt out. There's opt-out features under settings.
And that's part of why I think you saw Instagram doing this too, because you know, the other thing that happened is as Facebook and Instagram, they're blending their privacy policies together so that Facebook can do these things off of just the Facebook platform. So this is an extension of what they're already doing. By the way, this is a similar thing that happens on Google. I mean, if you have a Google Plus page and someone likes that Google Plus page and then you run AdWords for that Google Plus page, then potentially the people who like that Google Plus page will show up in your AdWords, and even little thumbnails of their pictures might appear in some cases. So, and I presume that at some place we agreed to that as well. And that all comes back to the whole adage that everybody keeps repeating again. That is, if you don't, you know what the product is, you are it. Or if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product. That we don't pay for these services.
Derek Pawizek wrote a
great rebuttal to that. But before we do that, I do want to make sure that people are up to date, because less than a day ago, Kevin Systrom responded on the Instagram blog. This is very much the Facebook MO, by the way. Exactly what Facebook's done time and time again. Invaded privacy, then backed off. He said, "We're listening. Thank you. We're going to modify specific parts of the term to make it more clear what will happen with your photos." He says, "Look, advertising is one of many ways Instagram can become a self-sustaining business. Our intention in updating the terms is to communicate that we'd like to experiment with advertising that feels appropriate on Instagram. It was interpreted by many. We were going to sell your photos to others." See, I think that is a red herring. I don't think that that was the issue. I don't know why CNET focused on that, because that's not the thing. My takeaway wasn't that. This is not true. Well, of course not. And it's our mistake that the language is confusing. It is not our intention to sell your photos. Okay. What is your intention? "We envision a future where both users and brands alike may promote their photos and accounts to increase engagement and build a more meaningful following." Essentially, he's kind of saying we sponsored posts. "It would be helpful to see which of the people you follow also follow this business. In some way, some of the data you produce, like the actions you take following an account and your profile photo, might show up if you're following this business." So Leo Laporte follows XYZ porn star. You might want to, too, kind of thing. The language you proposed also raised questions about whether your photos can be part of an advertisement. Now, this is interesting. "We do not have plans for anything like this, so we're going to remove the language that raised the question." They implied that they did by saying we reserve the right to do that, but they said, nah, we don't want to do that anyway. "We don't assert ownership." I didn't think they did. "You can set your photos to private. And then Instagram only shares photos of the people you've approved to follow you." So it's a Twitter model where normally on Instagram, everything's public unless you explicitly say, no, I don't want my stream to be public.
But why did they go through this needless kerfuffle?
Because it's the Facebook way. Push as hard forward as you can. And if somebody pushes back, you go, we didn't mean that. And if they don't, then go for it.
But Leo, I think it's more the case. There's a substantive difference here. If you put out newsfeed as an entirely new feature and people say, I don't know, it's new, I don't like it. And Mark says, okay, maybe I just communicated right, but trust me, this is something new. This is going to be good. This is important. That's different from a legal document. Instagram didn't change any features, didn't add anything of value to anybody. All it did was lawyers put out a document, and you could have shown this document to 10 average users, and they all would have said, are you knocking futs?
Right. Although, again, Nilay Patel says, you know, it was worse because the language was, he said this before many times about terms of service. We get upset when they get more specific, but he said, really, it's worse to have a very vague TOS.
That's absolutely true.
Because that gives them all the permission to do everything they want. So he says this is much better.
But to kind of rebut that, it's when they're vague, that often I think reflects that they don't have specific plans. And when they get specific, then they have specific things that they want to do. And that's when I think sometimes, and anytime you go through one of these things, it's also a time when people will go through and finally pay attention to, maybe we should sort of revisit this. So I don't know that's necessarily the case that, well, they had all these huge rights before, but now they got specific, so it's better. What's better is that you actually understand what they can and can't do. Specific
doesn't mean you have to like it.
Right. And, I mean, and specific would be a lot better. And I think that's part of the issue that Google had when they made their changes earlier this year, was that they really kind of gave themselves a lot of broad abilities, even though they didn't have any intentions to do it. And it would be nicer, perhaps, if alongside these legalistic documents that we get and these privacy things that we get, is that we also get, you know, a Bill of Rights. What are you not going to do?
Right.
You know, people looked at the Google thing and they assumed, well, now they're going to sell our search data to all these different people because they can do it. And Google would say, well, no, we're not going to do that. And it's like, well, how do I know you're not going to do that? You haven't itemized it anywhere. So list the things that you absolutely will not do with our data, and then we'll know. And, you know, and that may be more useful to us, you know, as well as if you want to itemize the stuff that you are doing, that would certainly be helpful.
I will give them credit for saying, look, this only applies to pictures you post after these come into these terms of service come into play January 16th. So you don't, if you've been using Instagram, you don't have to delete all your photos because those are not in play, except that they are, if you believe Neelai, because they were under the old terms of service, and they still can do anything they want with them. But they essentially said, we're only thinking of doing this from January 16th on, to pictures you post from that point on. My response was, whether or not they roll back, they've indicated what they want to do, and I just don't want to play. I don't want to be part of Facebook either, but you kind of have to. You don't have to be part of Instagram.
Well, but I mean, a lot of large brands do these days. You know, that
they
understand that things are being shared there, and you know, and in fact, Instagram is just finally getting to the point where they're, this is the whole, in our take on Marketing Land, part of the thing was, you know, our angle was, have they already killed it before they get, the marketers get a chance to actually do the things they want to do on this network that do in other places. So, you know, they seem to be trying to figure out, how do we start paying for that $750 million that we actually cost Facebook, or whatever it was in the end. And, but yeah, you're going to have major brands on there that are wanting to share stuff, and they're not going to be able to get off. And you may have people who feel like, I still got to be there, because chances are there's still going to be a big, huge audience that have to be out there. So maybe you'll be back. And
yeah, you're right. I mean, that's why I left Facebook and why I had to come back. And it might be the same for – it certainly would be for the Twitter. The good news is, as I mentioned at the beginning, Flickr has a great app that has a lot of the same features. I paid up my Flickr Pro, so I know they're making money on me. I presume that means they're less likely to try to do this kind of stuff, right, Gina?
Well, you explicitly set the terms under which your photos can be used on Twitter, on Flickr, with the Creative Commons licensing, you know, model that they had, they've had forever. Flickr is this very old school web app that just got really dusty for a while, and now is sort of seeing a comeback. My co-founder Anil, who you mentioned earlier, he did a great post this week called "The Web We Lost."
Yeah, and love it was about that.
It was a really great piece, just about the way the things that people valued when they made web applications 10 years ago versus today, like data export and import and Creative Commons licensing and openness and collaboration. You know, now we have Twitter cutting off access to the social graph, and Twitter, you know, Instagram disabling Twitter cards. I mean, it's like these companies are actively, and we'll talk about Google ActiveSync or Exchange later. It's like companies are now cutting off access to one another, but Flickr was kind of that, one of those old school, like, license your photos openly versus copyright them versus limit it. And it's just, you know, it stores multiple copies of your high resolution photo versus applying a filter and cropping it. You know, it's just a really different kind of time. I'm happy to be back. I've been using Flickr ever since my daughter was born, because I really like the way that the app works, and I like the you know, Flickr's values. And so I'm thrilled that all my friends are getting back onto it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although, you know, I'll add something. I did this story, and it was in 2009. It was called "Flickr's Big Fail on Creative Commons Attribution." And a lot of people will say, well, you know, Flickr's great because you can set your limitations and you can Creative Commons it or whatever. But the Creative Commons stuff is woefully inadequate in a lot of ways. It'll, when you go through, it'll say things like, I licensed this only for non-commercial use, and you have to attribute it. But there's still, I just looked at this a few months ago on Flickr. There's still no way to say the exact kind of attribution that you want. There's no kind of contact details that come along with it. So, if I take a photo off of Flickr, if I just say the Flickr person's name, was that attribution enough in the way that they wanted? Or was a link required? Did I have to link back to Flickr? There could be good improvements. And one thing I'd hope that Flickr would take away from this is actually revisit some of those attributions and make sure that people can better specify what's involved with it. Because,
well, of course, they didn't create it. Creative Commons is a separate organization, but I think those are good ideas, the Creative Commons. I don't know who the board is now. Joy Ito's been on it for ages.
I don't know if it's a Creative Commons problem, though. I think Flickr just needs one more field that says, and that attribution, how would you like that to be?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because right now, when you click on them, when you go to Flickr, you click on these things, and it takes you to, like, a Creative Commons page. It says, like, you know, you must attribute the work in a manner specified by the author and licensor. Right. And then, but when you post pictures to Flickr, you don't necessarily say it. And I think a bigger issue of all this is just how the photo sharing services in general have still not evolved. You get these photos that are shared all over the place, and, you know, the mainstream media will just consider it to be a help yourself type of thing. If they see the picture that's out there and then they grab it, some of them try to get in contact with people. Some people have no idea how you get in contact with someone to use a photo. So it still feels like when it comes to photos, especially when there's breaking news photos that people are sharing out there, that it's like the Wild West.
Well, that's where the idea of selling photos actually is a good idea. If Instagram said, we will act as your agent.
Right.
And if a news organization comes to us and wants to buy your photo, we will communicate that to you and we'll act like a PayPal for you and we'll help you sell your photos if you want to. Or you can say, you can state that on there. That would have been pretty cool. Flickr should do the same thing.
Big opportunity for Flickr here.
And Twitter as well, because Twitter takes and they host all their own photos as well, and people are doing that. And I agree, that would be an ideal thing where people could say, hey, this is great. I'm not going to go out there and try to license my own photo. And if you can do that for all these organizations, then great. But, you know, sign me up. Or if you really are concerned about it, you say no. And that's indicated as part of your photos as well. This is not licensed for greater use unless you get in contact in some way.
Is the backlash against Instagram overblown? Here's National Geographic's response. They have almost 650,000 followers on Instagram. They got 40,000 likes on this. It says, this is an Instagram photo. Nat Geo is suspending new posts to Instagram. We're very concerned with the direction of the proposed new terms of service. If they remain as presented, we may close our account. And that was the big one, right? That was the big one.
Certainly helped me realize National Geographic was on Instagram.
You know, I didn't know they were either.
I didn't either.
But I won't bother following them now.
Use it for pulling your photos off. But
notice they said we're suspending posting and we may close our account if these terms go into effect. See, this is the thing. I think that everyone had this knee-jerk reaction and deleted their account. And then Instagram said, oh, actually, we screwed up and we're gonna revise this language. And I saw somebody tweet like, oh, who wrote the tool where I can re-import my photos back into Instagram? You know, I mean, there's a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction. But this is what I was talking about in the op-ed I did for the Times that we talked about last week, is like, this is it working. This is the community working, right? So like Instagram puts out those terms and says this is going to go into effect in 30 days. The community criticizes it, forces them to clarify, forces them to say, actually, you know what? We never really meant to do that, so we shouldn't include that language. And they're revising it. I mean, this is how things iterate. So I didn't delete my account. I've always sort of double posted from Instagram and Flickr, like through Instagram. Instagram always did allow you to post to Flickr at the same time because I wasn't sure if I was actually going to stick with Instagram. I didn't close my account. So I think Nat Geo actually did the right thing where they said, you know, we're going to wait.
Yeah.
We're going to wait, see if this is actually going to go down the way that it did. And they got great press. I mean, they put the pressure on Instagram. And right now we all know that Nat Geo is on Instagram.
John Blanton has a good point in our chat room, though. If there wasn't this strong reaction, maybe Instagram would have not rethought.
That's true. Absolutely true.
So it had the effect intended. We'll see what their response is.
Yeah.
Getting to Derek Powazek's post on his blog, powazek.com. This is actually good. I'm glad. I've used this phrase too. I think it came from a Reddit post. If you're not paying for the product, you are the product. The implication being that maybe you're paying for Flickr so you don't have to worry so much, but if you're getting Facebook and Instagram and Google for free, then maybe they're selling you to somebody else. His point is, you know, that's not necessarily true. First of all, there's a couple of false assumptions. In many cases, an example would be this show. It's a free product, but advertising supported. Free media is a very popular form of media. He also says there's some assumption that you pay a company, they're going to treat you better. There's no evidence of that. He says, I can answer this with one word, AT&T or Comcast or Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
So his point, I think, is well taken, which is We should stop using that phrase.
It's always been the media model.
Yeah.
The audience is sold to the advertiser, and that's what supports the free media. Yeah. It's not anything new.
Yeah. And it's nothing so bad about it, not so, as long as it's an explicit trade. And the thing I don't like, I just don't like the idea that Instagram is going to, you know, wanted to start using my images. It's the same thing Facebook, it's exactly the same thing Facebook was doing. Of course. We're going to take a break. We will have more. Instagram is done. You can now take your head out of the sand.
You can take off the filter off this screen now.
Because I know a lot. Already, it doesn't take long in this news cycle. 24 hours into this, people in the chat room are saying, I don't want to hear any more about it. I'm done with Instagram. Nice filter, though. I like that. This is the new Willow.
There you go.
Willow filter from Instagram. Andy Sullivan is here. SearchEngineLand.com. Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com. And Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. See, this is an ad. This portion is an ad. This is me doing an advertisement.
You mean they pay you for this?
I get paid, and this and the money that we receive for doing this ad pays for all that you see here, which is, believe me, not cheap.
Oh, I feel like the product.
You are the product. Actually, Danny Sullivan is the product. It's challenging. And when I started the Twit, I thought maybe we could do this user supported, because I'd love to just have, you know, a direct correlation. But as many have realized, especially when you're talking about media, people are used to free media, ad supported media. They're not going to pay.
And by the way, thank you, Stamps.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And we're picky. We have a handful of advertisers. They're selected carefully. We don't let just anybody advertise. We've refused quite a few advertisers, in fact, because we want to have a nice correlation between the audience and the advertisers. Stamps.com is a good example. This is a service. Now, the other thing that we do is it's just very straightforward. We tell you what the service is. We give you a free trial. If you want it, you got it. If not, you don't have to do anything about it. The only negative is I'm going to take a little bit of your time talking about it. That's all. And you can fast forward through this if you want. On the other hand, if you do a lot of mailing, you might want to listen, because Stamps.com. Oh, I left my scale in my office. The new scale is here with Stamps.com. So what is Stamps.com? It's the pro way to mail, so you never have to go to the post office. It means that you can do everything you do at the post office right from your desk, which means buy and print U.S. postage. No postage meter now, by the way. I don't know what the people who do postage meters are going to do about this. You just use your computer and your printer. You already got everything you need. No special ink or anything. You can also, the mail carrier will come and get the mail. So, you put it on them. You can print right on the envelope. So if you're doing invoices or mailers or anything like that, print right on the envelope. Return address. The address is taken from your address book or QuickBooks if you use that. Your logo, company logo, all this printed automatically by Stamps.com, even the postage, legal postage, right on the envelope. It actually looks more professional than having a stamp on the envelope. It looks like you do this for a living. If you're an Amazon, eBay, Etsy, PayPal, if you sell stuff online, all the fulfillment can be handled by Stamps.com. They take the address from the website. They fill out all the forms if necessary. If you're sending express or priority mail, they can send an email to your recipient saying it's on its way. Here's the tracking number. And they've got this great USB scale. You plug this into the computer, you plop the envelope or the package up to 25 pounds on here, and the software does the rest. It says, yeah, got it. Now, I'm going to show you how you can get this scale for free and a trial of Stamps.com, a no-risk trial offer. This is why I like our advertisers. They almost, I think, to a man and a woman, they all offer free trials. $80 bonus. Wait a minute, no. Click that microphone. Enter the word twig. Is that a word? Yeah, twig. And now the $80 offer is a $110 bonus offer that includes the scale. You pay shipping and handling for that. It's about $5. You get the supply kit worth $5 to make up for that. You get $55 in free postage that you can use over a few months' time and a four-week trial. It's all from Stamps.com. This is a great way, especially in the month of December, which is amateur hour at the post office. Stay out of the post office. Get your mailing done like a pro with Stamps.com. And yes, we thank them for their support of the show, making this possible. You mentioned, this is an interesting story, that Google is turning off Microsoft's Active Sync Exchange, which means if you use Windows Phone, Google is not a good choice for you. Is that what it means, Gina?
That's what it means. Yeah. So ActiveSync is, and actually I use the Exchange Sync on my iPhone as well.
Right. But that's okay. Exchange Sync will still work.
Yes.
IMAP works.
Well, so there's a difference. There's IMAP and CardDAV and CalDAV, right?
But then that's what the iPhone uses.
Right. That's what the iPhone uses. Right. So this means that basically Gmail users won't be able to sync their Google Calendar contacts and email to Windows phones using the Windows Phone email app. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Did I get that? Yeah.
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 And that's going to stop working January 30th.
Yep.
Microsoft could do what Apple did and support IMAP. That works with Gmail. CalDAV works with Calendar.
And CardDAV.
CardDAV works with contacts. Google also has said earlier that they're not going to make a Gmail app for Windows Phone and has no plans to make Windows apps for any of its apps.
Well, IMAP will still work on Windows Phone, though, won't it? I mean, when I set up Windows Phone with Mail, it was an IMAP account, I'm pretty sure.
I don't think so.
Yeah, IMAP will work. This is the issue. This is for email, calendar, and contact.
No, I don't think you have that option on a Windows Phone.
Really?
Hey, is
and
Alex
I don't
there?
Have mine upstairs, so I is can't Alex look there? Right now. But
Windows Phone doesn't support the email client, and Windows Phone doesn't support IMAP. IMAP is like
that can't be right.
IMAP's a standard.
Can't be right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it will still. So I think
it's really calendar and contacts. You're out of luck.
I think the problem is,
yeah,
Windows Phone, I'm pretty sure, will support any IMAP account because you can have an other email account and you go through and you do all the settings. You have to do it manually. And in fact, Windows Phone has been pretty awesome in the fact that I can give it a Google Apps, which is a Gmail account that you actually, you know, have in your own domain. I can give it that account and it's actually always set up the IMAP settings better than an Android phone will do. Android goes, I don't know what this is all about. It's a Google Apps account. I can't handle it. And Windows Phone goes, oh yeah, I know what it is. Your security, it's SSL, you know, it does it all. So I think it'll set it up. But I think the difference is that it's not going to automatically push email to you in the way that I guess Exchange Sync will do it. So you'd have to have your phone itself constantly checking, which, I mean, I just check manually anyway because I like to keep my battery going. So it's not been an issue for me. So I'm pretty sure you can still get your email through Windows Phone using the IMAP protocol, and that's not a problem. But the calendar, I know, has been absolutely awesome in that my Windows Phone I'll go through and sync with my calendar and everything. And I don't know how it's doing. It just knows that I have a Google account and it's been talking to the Google account. And it sounds like the calendar as well as the contacts are about to go poof and you're going to be out of luck on that unless Microsoft changes to another format on their end, right?
So you have a whole bunch of apps that are like Internet Explorer hasn't been on the Apple for 2 or 3 years now. You can't get Skype on Chrome, which means there's no Chromebook, and you now can't get Gmail natively on Windows Phone. It's this little game that goes on. It's you own Windows, you own this, you own the competitor. I just don't think, look at the experience, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, I'm sure, with Google and Maps on the iPhone. At some point, isn't it still in your benefit to serve customers no matter what they're using?
Well, it is, and in fact, this is where Google gets, I think, very hypocritical in some of this stuff. And let me say, I don't know enough technically on whether or not Google is using a common standard that would be easy for Microsoft to support or not when it comes to contacts and calendars. I can't tell on that. But when you say things like, well, Google doesn't want to write a Gmail app for Windows Phone, because a Gmail app is not required to get your mail from Gmail. In fact, I hate using the Gmail app on the iPhone and on Android because I prefer to have my messages be discrete, and I prefer email clients that actually loop them into a conversation but show them as discrete individual messages in that conversation, which Windows Phone will support, and iPhone's native client will do it, and on Android, it is all over the place as to whether or not any of the email clients will do it. But Google's not actually written a Gmail client for Windows Phone, and it's similarly.
Now, somebody just said, MXX just said you can get Gmail natively on Windows Phone. I don't know, so I'm confused.
You can. An Android phone has an email client, and then you can also get a Gmail client.
Okay.
The Gmail client's designed to work with Gmail and give you a more Gmail-like experience, but Gmail itself is just an email service, so any email client can interact with that service.
Here's Microsoft's response, and this is maybe is what confused me. Really want to do some winter cleaning? Switch to Outlook.com for the best email experience across all your devices. We were very surprised to see Gmail announced last week they'll soon end support for EAS, unless, of course, you're willing to pay Google for your email. Well, we'll still work on the apps platform. It means that many people currently using Gmail for free are facing a situation where they might have to degrade their mobile email experience by downgrading to an older protocol. Okay, I guess that's IMAP. That doesn't sync your calendar or contacts, doesn't give you direct push of new email messages, and doesn't have all the benefits of EAS. So they're saying just use Outlook.com and a web browser on your phone, and then you'll be fine.
I mean, I set up my iPhone. I use the Exchange account to set up my Gmail because to sync contacts and calendar, because that was the sort of best way that people in the know kind of knew, you know, to sync contacts and calendar and email. Actually, I didn't sync email because I just used the Gmail client.
So what they want you to do is forward your Gmail to Outlook.com, and then use Microsoft's Outlook.com on your mobile device.
But that doesn't solve the calendar contacts issue. That's part of the problem with Outlook. It's like Outlook.com can mock the idea that IMAP is an older protocol, but it's actually a newer protocol than POP, which Outlook supports. Yeah. Doesn't support IMAP, which is insane. One of the number one reasons I wouldn't use Outlook is because I don't have IMAP support. Right. And if you have IMAP support, then you have the ability to sync your mail. The big advantage to IMAP is that you're reading your email on your iPhone and you delete or archive a message, and then you go to your desktop and your desktop knows exactly what happened on your other phone. It's not, you know, they're syncing and they know your exact status. And, you know, I'm juggling four different phones sometimes and I've got two or three different computers, and IMAP makes it all happen, but I couldn't do that on Outlook unless I used EAS, I guess. Which I've never even bothered with because IMAP has been fine. But the calendar and the contact stuff is a big problem. Absolutely.
So who's bad here, Google or Microsoft? Seems like Google's the one turning the capability off.
It's hard to say because I don't know enough about Exchange Active Sync and how common that is or not common. I would probably put more of the bad part on Google, because why are you changing something that was probably already working?
Right. It seems spiteful. Seems a little spiteful.
Well, and it will continue to work for paying customers. So Google's making the bet that people who are using Windows Phone have the money in the corporate, you know, the kind of organization that will pay for Google Apps. So it does feel a little bit like, oh, you know, kind of like the Google Apps free accounts going away. It's like, oh, you hooked a lot of people with the free offering for a certain amount of time, and now saying, hey, you got to pay for this. So slightly troubling to me. Like, okay, this is becoming a pay for service now.
I think you also have to put that in the context of other things that Google's done. So I spend a lot of time with Google Voice and actually trying to get Google to explain to me why I can't get a Google Voice app for Windows Phone. Because since I use Google Voice as my primary number, not having a Google Voice account on Windows Phone is a problem for me, mm-hmm. because I can't dial out from my own number. Mm-hmm. And worse, if I want to still use the Google Voice account in some way, there's no web-based interface that's functional. I actually have to go to a third-party app, and I have to trust a third-party app with not just my Google Voice account information, but my entire Google account information. So this is a security issue. And there are significant numbers of people who use Windows Phone and Windows devices. It's not anywhere near Android, not anywhere near iOS, but there are still significant numbers of people. So it's like, why are you producing a potential security issue for people by not supporting this? Because it is probably not hard for you to come up with something. But secondly, aren't you the same company that threw a hissy fit when you couldn't get Google Voice approved for iOS? And you threw that hissy fit. You wanted the audience over at iOS, but you didn't say it like, oh, we wish we were on iOS because there's a significant audience there that we want to reach. You know, make it all sound like this is a fairness and it's equality and it's, you know, rights and access and everything else. And when that's not really the case, we want to be on iOS because a lot of our audience is there and we think we need to be involved with it, but we don't give a toss about Windows Phone, especially in terms of even possibly helping it emerge as a competitor, because there's not that many people there, so we won't bother. But when it came to rolling out Windows 8, and Windows 8 made some significant changes on how your search default changes and how you get to have a search default provider, suddenly it's like, we cannot at Google get a search app out fast enough to make sure that you can keep getting Google the way you want to have Google. Because in that case, the Windows system is big enough that they actually care about it. They didn't do anything like, well, gosh, you know, we can't support everybody and it's, you know, we don't know what we're going to do. And goodness knows people could just find us directly by going to Google. So, yeah, I found it disappointing more on Google's part than Microsoft's part. I wish they had taken the high road and continued to support it. But then I've also been an Outlook user on Windows. When I shifted over to Outlook on the Mac, it's like nothing works over there.
Yeah.
Can't sync stuff with Google. Can't sync. You can sync your email, but if you want your calendar to talk, you want your calendar on your Mac to talk to your iCloud calendar, forget it. You want your calendar to talk to, you know, Google, forget it. And whether it's Apple or Microsoft or Google or none of them all talking, it's just been a mess.
It seems like there's no technical reason, obviously, why they couldn't continue to support it. And certainly it can't be a cost reason. But perhaps could you say the reason is they didn't want to support a proprietary protocol and preferred to support open protocols like CalDAV and CardDAV. These are open protocols.
Didn't they clean a whole bunch of stuff out of...
They're saying we're not going to support a protocol by one company for one company. Why doesn't Microsoft use IMAP, CalDAV, and CardDAV?
Right, right. But unless you pay us, right? I mean, they're
unless you pay us, and that's a little weird. Okay.
Yeah, they're still supporting it. It'd be one thing if they were like, well, you know.
No, but if you pay us, yeah.
It's a little weird.
And somebody's telling me existing devices will work, only new devices won't work.
Yeah, that wording was interesting. So, yeah, it said for new devices. So if I've got Exchange Sync set up on my device, then it's going to, on a free account, then it's going to continue to work. So we're checking the device ID, I guess.
Yeah,
somehow.
Right. It's a hissy fit. You've convinced me. It's them going, up yours, Microsoft.
Well, and
it's their payback for Scroogle.
To the fact that...
Well, and not just Scroogle, but now it's getting worse and worse. There's some other stuff on here. You have, they hired, what's his name?
From somebody?
Hired gun to go after, Microsoft hired a political operative to go after Google.
Oh, yeah, Mark Penn.
Thank you, Mark Penn.
Wasn't that interesting? Mark Penn's the guy who did all that research for Clinton.
Right. The New York Times today has an op-ed. It's a very strange thing to me. It's an op-ed that is clearly placed by Microsoft. That's the disclosure at the end, which is just its PR move against Google. And it's an op-ed with major play.
Yeah.
So Microsoft's on a major. So now Apple is seeming to calm down. And now Microsoft is deciding that it's going to get louder in its long-standing nya-nya-nya fight against Google.
I mean, Mark Penn was the negative ad pollster for Bill Clinton, and so when you hire that guy, he was at Burst & Marsteller, the PR firm. When you hire that guy to go after Google,
you know what you're going to get.
You know what? I can't wait. Scroogling has just begun. Get ready for more. Won't be coming from the FTC though. They say Google did not violate antitrust.
They haven't said it out loud yet, but the reports are that they don't have a case against Google. They're trying to say in somewhat in sync with the EU. The EU is still pushing it. But basically, it's what I've been saying all along. There's not a good antitrust case here. Mm-hmm. And I think that they just legally don't have it. And that's what's happening. So
they
Google
would love to file a case, but they just don't. They can't. We're sure there's a trust in there somewhere.
Big, so they must be bad and evil.
Yeah.
Exactly, away from the search bias claims.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. But the EU could still go on.
EU is trying, but it's having similar problems. But
and the DOJ is investigating, too, the Department of Justice, the U.S. Department of Justice.
But so, I don't think they're going to, you know, we'll see. I don't think they're going to get anywhere. The FTC just announced its new COPPA a few minutes ago, privacy.
The Child Online Protection and Privacy Act.
Yeah.
And are they the enforcers thereof?
They are. They are. So as we've talked about on the show before, there's nothing really terribly new there versus what we've had. But they're now the things that were in discussion and in hearings and such are formally announced, and they're much tougher. They're going to have a big impact on some sites.
So they're going to cover apps with COPPA, but they are exempting Apple's App Store and Google Play because they're not apps, they're platforms. Both Apple and Google lobbied the FTC hard, saying we can't be held responsible for what these apps do.
So all these like kids' games are going to say, "Hey, kids, you by tapping this button, you agree that you've told your parents about all your information that we're sucking in." And kids are tapping yes, and I just want to play.
Nope, Gina, that won't be the way it works. In fact, what has to happen is, the parent has to give explicit permission for the app to do these things. And the permission used to be able to come from email. That's no more. The parent has to do one of a few things. Last I knew in the draft, one was print out, sign, and scan back
in a document. Hey kids, print this out.
That's a document, or have a video conference with the company.
Wow, that's a little
much. Wait. So a kid's game in the App Store, say the Play Store.
If it wants to use any personally identifiable information, which is to say, for example, as far as I know it, gee, this is a geography game, kids. Where do you live? And we'll tell you how big Texas is over your house. Or if it's, I would imagine if it wants to hold your, winning accounts under something like your name. Or if it wants to get your email address to send you something. Any of those things where it's PII, personally identifiable information, then the parent must give explicit permission in those ways I just outlined.
Well, the center
is the device ID. I'm sorry, Leo. Is the device ID considered PII?
U.S. in the EU, there is talk about an IP address being considered personally identifiable information, which is insane. But
there's the Center for Digital Democracy has written a letter to the FTC saying, hey, you got to investigate this SpongeBob Diner Dash game. This is from Nickelodeon. It's a freemium app, so it's free on the iPhone and iPad. It's in the kids' game section. It's got SpongeBob. If you have kids, SpongeBob SquarePants is very, very, very popular. The idea is for children to help SpongeBob seat, serve, and satisfy all kinds of fishy customers in five colorful bikini bottom restaurants run by the selfish Mr. Crab. It asks, and kids have to buy virtual coins to buy shoes that make SpongeBob faster or a frying pan that makes the cook faster. But the kids are asked for all sorts of stuff, including full name, email address, another contact information without providing notice to parents or obtaining prior parental consent.
They're going to get zapped bad.
Yeah. And it's Nickelodeon. The filing asks the FTC to investigate the app's data collection and privacy notice practices, including its use of mobile marketing techniques such as UDIDs and device tokens, to your question, Gina, which enable companies to send custom messages to individual children in the form of push notifications. So, yeah, under COPPA, those are considered personal information.
Oh, okay.
This, according to the Center for Digital Democracy.
Well, there are other clauses that relate specifically to targeting children in advertising.
Yeah.
So if you know it's a child, blah, 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 blah. But, yeah.
Right. Well, and obviously no adults playing SpongeBob SquarePants.
Hey, Diner Dash.
It's a fun game. I play the grown-up version of Diner Dash. there is another version. Just for you grown-ups. Well, we'll see what happens. Google, did they pay a Belgian?
No, they didn't pay.
Okay, what happened? Did they?
Here's the background. Okay. So the French-Belgian papers have for some time been trying to go after Google News, and they pulled out of Google News, and they went back, and then there's all kinds of back and forth, and now there's an agreed-upon, not a settlement, I wouldn't call it, but a
resolution.
And as I understand it, Google, there's no explicit mention of Google paying royalties for the privilege of quoting and linking to their news stories.
Google says we are collaborating with them to make money.
Google is going to take out ads for its own Google services in those publications. Wink, wink. And
yeah, we used to do that in cable television. You'd go when you want to get to tech TV on a cable operator. Let's say you want to get on in beautiful New York City. So you go to Cablevision and you have this little black bag that has money in it. And you say, we would like to give you some marketing co-op dollars, mm-hmm. which means here's some money. This will help you market our new channel. Here's $1 million. Do whatever you want. But it's the same deal. We're going to buy ads in Le Monde.
So Google is going to buy ads that's from France. Belgium. It's going to buy ads and publications. It's going to put ads on these publications and help them make money, which is fine. They always could do that.
2 to 3% of sales, around 5 million euros, according to Le Monde.
And this goes right to the, shall we say it, shall we cue it? The Leistungsschutzrecht.
Oh, man. So what is the deal? Why is it? Why is this the same? What is say again? Just remind us what Leistungsschutzrecht is.
Leistungsschutzrecht is an ancillary copyright that would demand Google to pay straight out, basically a fee, for the privilege of quoting headlines and snippets and linking to news articles. Google's refused to do that because imagine what would happen. Imagine the precedent set. If suddenly everyone on Earth said, you can't link to me and give me, by the way, great benefit and value, if you don't pay me, A, B, the impact on, in this country, fair use is devastating.
It's a Leistungsschutzrecht.
The Leistungsschutzrecht.
I wasn't listening to anything you said, Jeff. I was busily finding this YouTube video.
Okay, I do, Leo. I just blathered until the time.
Just in between reggae hits.
Is it 420?
So it is a way. Yeah, it's 420. Go ahead.
Not on the West Coast.
Not on the West Coast yet. But I mean, look, buying ads is giving them money. Yeah, we're going to buy some ads from you. So that's giving them money.
Well, they got bribed to do it.
Yeah.
It looks like.
Google's done this before. Google's done this mainly with the wire services where they have had disputes with the AP or AFP, and then they've gone back and forth, and then in the end they've said, we're not going to license things. We all agree about that. Although we are going to do an agreement to work on things that would go beyond fair use and will help us better. Like with the AP, they're like, help us better understand when we have duplicate content and blah, 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 blah. And in the end, it actually just might as well have been a license.
Google actually did license AP content, Denny.
Yeah, but not for the reasons that AP was upset about. Google specifically said, we are licensing, you know, content to go beyond the stuff that is fair use. They were really, really careful to say, we're not licensing AP because of there was some fair use violation. But we want to do things that go beyond fair use. Therefore, okay, what kind of deal?
Yeah.
And that shut AP up. AP has been quiet for a very long time.
The irony is it hurt the newspapers because a lot of those links that would go to AP stories used to go to random newspaper sites where the AP story was run. And now instead they go to AP stories on Google.com. So the AP hurt its own members, but that's the way it works. This is getting awfully inside baseball for most of the world, but I'm having dinner tonight with executives from Agence France-Presse, so I'll abuse them about this.
Google could have have a strong hand. They could have just said, yeah, fine. You don't want – I mean, that's what they've done in the past. You don't want to
– Well, Google still – I mean, the Belgian case was still, if I remember correctly, going to an appellate court. And, you know, Google had won some things here but not won some other things there. So it was still being appealed. And, you know, this is a cheap way to get the whole thing settled and shut it up at the same time when you're actually looking, as Jeff says, at a far bigger issue, which is, wow, people in France and Germany seem to want to be doing what people in the U.S. were doing 2 years ago and then finally gave up on. It's like kind of watching a time warp going on where the French and German newspapers seem to think that, oh, well, I guess you can just pay us some money now. Because the U.S. papers, especially being led by the Wall Street Journal or the News Corp, kind of gave up on that as their ad prospects started coming back up. And they were like, oh, yeah, those page views, those are important to us. Actually, we're still making quite a bit of money off of that. So that's fine. Let's leave that stuff running.
I didn't mention this, but this might have something to do with the scroogling of Microsoft's and the Exchange server. Pamela Jones Harbor, who is according to the New York Times, former member of the FTC, now a lawyer at Fulbright and Jaworski, where she represents Microsoft, mm-hmm. wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times on the 18th, which was yesterday, slamming Google.
And it was just a straight-out PR shot.
Wow.
Straight as to be. And I found it really odd that the New York Times would give it this kind of play. And, you know, it has the disclosure at the end.
Yeah.
That she works for Microsoft, but all it is the company line against Google.
She says that settling with the FTC would be a severe setback for internet users. It'll allow Google to continue to amass unbridled control over data gathering with grave consequences for privacy for consumer choice.
Except that the FTC isn't investigating anything about that in terms of antitrust.
Oh. Right.
The FTC right. investigation is whether or not Google has been anti-competitive in some very specific areas. None of those have been related to consumer protection or gathering too much data. So, this feels very much like the FTC is about to settle with Google and not in the way that Microsoft and Microsoft's group of people that have decided that Google's been anti-competitive to them in search want. So what else can we do to slow it down? And they seem to be successful because there were a lot of accounts that we were going to get an FTC ruling this week, and now it looks like we're not going to have that until after the new year. So they may have stalled the FTC saying, fine, you're good, Google, and we'll probably have a bit more debate on that.
She writes, when she was at the FTC, she dissented on the commission's approval of the Google's acquisition of DoubleClick because she was concerned that combining the two companies would allow Google, largely unchecked by competition, to develop invasive profiles of individuals' internet habits. I think there's a risky strategy for Microsoft to pursue because I'm sure they're doing the same thing.
Go ahead, Dan.
That's the thing. It's like I was concerned that Google's combining those things. I was concerned that both the two companies combining unchecked by competition would let them have invasive profiles of internet habits. But if only another big company. to compile as an invasive database that would protect consumers. Oh, by the way, shoving the word competition in there somewhere because I got to get back to the fact that we're really actually more upset that Google may be not being stalled on competitive fronts rather than being a consumer protection thing.
Yeah. Consumer protection and competition have nothing to do with one another.
No. Yeah. But the other, this is where I think both Microsoft and News Corp are similar because it would be going too far to say they've given up on advertising. But advertising is not the core to their business that it certainly is to Google and much of media. And News Corp is going after fees. Microsoft is going after fees and licensing. And neither has proven these days to be good at online digital advertising. So they're going after the core of their competitors' business.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, as an FTC commissioner, should we be concerned that the first thing you do after not being an FTC commissioner is to go off and represent people who then want to argue stuff in front of the FTC?
I'm getting dizzy in that revolving door, eh, Danny?
She writes, I'm no longer an FTC commissioner, but a lawyer representing companies, including Microsoft.
That makes her sterling.
That are concerned about Google's power as a data collector. Yes, there's some irony in that. It wasn't long ago that Microsoft faced its own major antitrust lawsuit and had to change its anti-competitive practices. We're now clean and wholesome. I'm surprised. I guess, though, the op-ed page has never been a place for objectivity.
Well, you know, I had an episode happen recently. I wrote a blog post about this, the tax fight that Google and also Starbucks and Amazon are in the UK, where I said that taxes are a legal obligation, not a moral choice. And to make Google and these other companies try to choose to pay more is ridiculous in all kinds of ways. So I wrote this blog post. And then Google came to me and said, well, The Guardian is looking for somebody to write an op-ed on this topic. You want to write it? And I said, well, that's what I'd write. And so they went back to The Guardian. It never happened. But that was so weird to me that, here's a newspaper negotiating with a company saying it's basically saying, well, we haven't been very nice to you, so you can get somebody to write something that says what you want to say.
Yeah.
And Google doesn't want to write it.
It's going to go the other way, too. I mean, give it a week, give it 2 weeks.
Larry Page will have an op-ed.
Schmidt or Page will be in there with like, hey, at Google, we're just publishing a search engine and it's all good.
In fact, as I remember, Larry Page did have an op-ed piece in the Times not so long ago.
Some time ago, that's true. Yeah. Maybe this is the response to that. Maybe Microsoft came along and said, not fair.
Yeah. Yeah. We got somebody who can write something. The op-ed page is notorious for being that way. I've
never put into the op-ed page. It pisses me off.
Now, here's where the competition, where the rubber really hits the road.
I know where you're going.
Microsoft has stolen the Santa tracker. Since 2004, the NORAD Santa tracker was a Google NORAD deal.
No, not since 2004. Since 2007.
2007?
So, I'll get into them hacking this whole thing if you want.
Yeah, yeah, because now Google lost it, right? NORAD's doing a deal with Bing.
So, Leo, it starts back in, 1974.
I remember doing this on the radio. We would get clips.
Listening. You were probably telling me on the radio that Santa was coming.
I would. I'd get clips from NORAD that you would drop in.
This is Lieutenant Commander G. William F. Buckley reporting from NORAD's command center near the North Pole. It looks like the jolly old elf has begun his rounds.
And then you'd play that. It was cute. And you'd play it all evening.
He's coming.
Yeah. And it was fun. And the kids would listen to the radio. And they go, look, it's on the radio. It must be true. And it's, you know, it's a guy in a uniform. And then it got really, in the internet era, it wasn't as good, frankly. It changed.
No, it's better. Well, I mean, so you know, NORAD, they're the missile tracking people, right? In 1955... there was an ad that was printed for Sears Roebuck saying, call, find out where Santa is. And they printed the wrong phone number, and people started calling the NORAD.
Oh, you're kidding. That's how it started?
That's how it started. And so NORAD said, all right, yeah, let's check our radar. Here he is. And that's how the tradition got started, that they were tracking Santa. So as you said, you know, and that's how I remember it. It used to be on the radio.
Yeah.
Time around 2004, they seemed to be getting onto the web, and they started doing this stuff. And
here's what it looks like. I got a little clip from YouTube of NORAD tracking a Santa, North American Air Defense Command.
And this is what's great about it, by the way, because you can say
they got 3D animations. Notice the big Google logo in the lower right hand corner. I mean, it got cheesed up. I don't know. Are kids more persuaded now?
They love it. The kids, they love it. The only thing I really hated is, as a parent, I wanted to time shift it because you really want the kids to go to bed at like 9.
Now.
So it doesn't help that Santa is in the middle of the country. I want to say, look, he's coming around now. But Google said in their blog, so since 2007, Google has formally partnered with NORAD, where it has been, you know, Google Maps, Google YouTube, all sorts of Google things. And in fact, there were other Santa trackers, but over the – and I track this every year. Santa tracker.
Really?
I do. Every year at Christmas Eve, it's like I'm going to disappear. I got to – here's what's going on with the Santa tracking. Here's the rundown. Because it used to be more complicated. You used to have all sorts of different things you could do in addition to NORAD. Now I just run through and say, well, here's how NORAD's working today. And, you know, here's where the videos are. And here's how you can get it on your phone and so on and so on. And all these other Santa trackers have disappeared. NORAD has just been this juggernaut that's been out there. And Google's
a monopoly. I want the FTC to investigate NORAD.
Maybe they really have been this thing with Google. And then what happened was, normally December 1st, like clockwork, I'm sitting around waiting for Google to do their blog post about, hey, it's Christmas time again and holiday time, and we're working with NORAD. It never came. And then it was I think last week that Microsoft posted they were working with NORAD. Google's gone. Google's out of it. We don't have the details. I got a statement from NORAD. This was all I wrote it up on Search Engine Land, but I got a statement from NORAD, and they're saying, yes, we've gone our different ways this year, and, you know, we're working with Microsoft now. And there's no, like, statement about who's paying what or whatever, but someone's paying something, right? And Google was out. Okay, so you're kind of like, ha-ha, a little bit. Microsoft.
Look at this, though, Danny. So if you go to NORADSanta.org, where they have the countdown to track Santa, but you look down here in the bottom, download the official NORAD Track Santa Windows 8 app. Now, they do have a Google and iPhone app.
They bought Santa Claus.
I think Microsoft said...
bought Santa.
Yeah.
They did buy Santa, or they bought Santa for more money than Google was paying for it.
Apparently. You can also get NORAD official iTracked Santa gear.
Yes, you can. It's gotten...
This has really gotten commercial.
I'm glad that Danny has followed this,
goodness,
this story.
Danny.
Yeah, it's like, he's really a historian. Have the backstory on this.
Yeah.
It is.
Notice right below that NORAD tracking center, there's one thing that you're going to still see there, which is YouTube. And I'll come back to that. So Google's out. Ha ha. Windows wins. Great. You know, isn't that funny? Blah, blah, blah. Or isn't it sad? Because in some ways, Google got really into this whole NORAD thing. So today, Google announces that, oh, yeah, since 2004, we've been tracking Santa.
Here, wait. Let me turn this down. It's overpowering. It's the NORAD tracked Santa video. Sorry. Go ahead.
And so they, you know, they say we've been tracking Santa since 2004, and, you know, here we are doing it once again at our new Google Tracking Center. There's no mention of NORAD. So really, Google is now taking on the missile defense people.
It's gotten that big.
You think you track missiles? We track all the world's information. We can go toe-to-toe with you.
Wow.
And that's exactly what's happening.
So they created their own Santa Tracker page. Now, this is still NORAD's Santa Tracker. This is their promotional video for 2012.
Key difference that will be between these two things. Google is not going to produce its own video of Santa flying around. It's only going to show you where they're running around on maps.
Here's the official Windows 8 app, by the way.
Probably not going to produce its own video because the one thing that NORAD is continuing to do is to post all that video over to Google-owned YouTube.
Oh, wow.
So you see, we can't have Christmas harmony.
Google's double dipping.
For now. You know, the thing is, next year, maybe Google will decide they want to do their own videos as well. And anyway, for those of us, me who tracks and a tracking.
It's gotten vicious.
Recursive tracking.
How old are your kids now, Danny?
Well, they're 11 and 13, so it's...
Is it now moot?
Hey, if anybody's watching this, go away. No, we're very believers in the household.
Of course. You know what I always say? Those who don't believe in Santa don't get presents from Santa.
Very good point.
Yes. Here's the Google Santa Tracker, which is frankly a little more HTML5 than the NORAD Santa Tracker. And there's more stuff to do. There's little bouncy activities.
I'm waiting to see the drones come in after Santa.
No.
Santa.
You can message and they'll say it. I got to say, though, I kind of wish
Google... Wait a minute. They have a Google Plus link to Santa.
They do.
Oh, Santa is clearly on Google Plus.
You can add a Nexus 7 to your wish list for Santa.
Oh, I bet you can.
Aww.
Open an ad saying that you like Santa.
I'm gonna like Santa right now.
Can I add some Nexus?
I'm clearly the Grinch in the room.
Yo, wait till Etta says, Mommy, we can track Santa. Here he comes.
You're going to videotape it and put it up online.
Yeah.
I'm going to crush all the Santa dreams from the get-go.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What a Grinch.
Oh,
yeah, I know. I'm a Grinch.
You are going to get so much spam now.
I know. I read this great post. I think it was Charlie Park did this post about how, like, he wanted to be honest with his kids about Santa. He also wanted them to enjoy the story of it and the character of it. So he said that he tells his kids that Santa is a game that people play.
Oh, that's
and
good.
That you pretend that Santa's real. Like, the rules of the game is you pretend that Santa's real and you never break character. But, you know, this
have
is
you
kind
told
of
your mother you're going to do this yet?
No, we have not.
She's
broken
not
going to
look at this. Look at this. She's get not, ready. You can chat with. Well, welcome every holiday season. Wait a minute, I got to do this. It's a Santa voice.
You have to do this. Make sure you sign the legal agreement before you do it.
Yeah, every holiday season, I make personal phone calls to North American phone numbers between the hours of 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. and send personal messages on Google Plus and email 24 hours a day.
Let's check the copper report.
First, what is your birthday? Only big kids can send messages.
This violates COPPA.
Well, wait a minute. Let me make myself a little kid. I'll say I was born in 2002. I'm 10.
Tough cookie and screwed.
Sorry, little elf. Only grown-ups can send messages.
Hey, Santa. What the hell?
Go click on the birthday.
You used
again.
A bad word. You're on my nasty list.
How can I get back? Refresh
in the chat thing. It may let you go back.
No, I don't think so. It says you're done. I have to re.
So much for honesty.
Reboot. Yeah, I'm gonna. Yeah. So this really works, right? Instead of giving them so most kids are smart enough to go, oh, okay. Let me say my birthday was 11/29/1903. That'll work.
Parents said that you can lie about your.
Have
birthday.
You read over our terms of service and privacy policy? Even Santa has a legal team.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is why I'm not telling Etta about this.
This is horrible.
This is terrible.
What is your name? Leo. I'm not sure how to say your name. How should I refer to you in the message?
Skip saying my name. Oh, call me bro. Look at the choices. Bro. Brother from another mother. Cheerleader.
No.
Dude, dudette, geek, hacker, heartbreaker, hipster.
Hello, hottie? Hipster. Hello.
Hottie?
Hello, hottie.
Hottie?
I'm going to be. Are you a guy or a gal?
A little late to ask that, Santa.
What are you wearing right now?
Oh, Santa's a creeper. Who should we send the message to? What
Wait,
is their
Google,
name?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You think I'm faking this?
Hottie?
I'm not sure how to say their name. How should I refer to them in the message?
Cutie pants. Send.
Are they a guy or a gal?
They're a guy.
What is your relationship to Leo? You are their
bestie. That's his. Oh, I'm sorry. Zero people are going through this. Zero.
What does Leo do for a living?
Oh, my God. I'm an athlete.
Where does Leo live?
This is so highly illegal. No, I guess because I said I was over of age.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, because now I'm giving information about somebody else.
What would he like for a gift? A beach body.
This is, what the hell? This is filthy.
We're almost done. Just a few more questions to go. What kind of underwear do you? What fun nickname should I call Leo?
Sister from another mister. Sure, why not?
Jesus.
Would Leo be celebrating this? What will Leo be celebrating?
No Festivus on here. I'm very disappointed. I'll be celebrating staying warm, the holidays, the new year, the season, winter, Christmas, Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa. I'm going to celebrate.
So Santa Claus is going to call you for Hanukkah?
Hello, yes. Happy Hanukkah. Yes,
what type of food? This is in. This is
what
in,
is this?
Baba Ganoush.
You can say that, not Leo.
What do you think I enjoy during my free time? Catching up on the soaps, cleaning the garage, gassing up the sleigh, gassing up Mrs. Claus, getting some me time.
Holy cow! Oh no! Wait a minute. Now there's a message for me.
Yeah, click on it. You get to hear it play.
Oh, you knew this, Danny.
I did. It's crazy.
Oh, ho, ho. Hello, cutie pants. This is Santa Claus. I just spoke with your bestie, Hottie. He told me you have been a very good athlete and that this year you would like a beach body. Well, my first stop is your house in La La Land. So don't forget to leave me some Baba Ganoush. And be sure to go to bed early so I can bring you a surprise. But no peeking. All right, sister from another mister. Santa has to go pack up the sleigh with presents and get in some me time. Later, alligator.
Google, this is the war on Christmas. Hello, Fox News. Google's fought Christmas.
Wow, pedo Santa. Okay, well, that was like Mad Libs. I'm gonna
it was.
Now, can I share that on Google Plus? You bet I can.
Yeah.
Oh, ho, ho. Wow. Santa's a perv. That is just wild.
Where whose 20% time was this?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Can I save it? Copy link. I don't know if I can save it. No, you can't save it. They don't want anybody to hear it. So you can do NORAD, where Lieutenant Commander G. Clay Whistle will tell you that Santa's now over Japan. Or you can have Santa hit on you. Wow. This
Santa
the battle,
culture is weird.
The battle for Christmas. Didn't you do Santa when you were a kid?
Totally. I absolutely did Santa, but I was the youngest by far of four. So my believing, like everyone's good Christmas sort of hinged on my believing. So at the point at which I started to get a little skeptical and be like, I don't really get, I mean, reindeer's flying and there are billions of houses and we don't have a chimney. You know, my whole family was like, no, this is, you know, don't ruin Christmas. Santa's real. And it, you know, it was bad. I felt I was like, I'm being actively lied to for everyone else's entertainment. Felt like that.
Wow. You just had a lot
of Santa baggage.
Wow. A lot of baggage.
A lot of Santa baggage.
How about your wife? How does she feel about this?
She's like presents. She's cookies and presents. Not religious at all.
No Santa, though.
Cookies and presents. Santa, as far as Santa involves presents. Which is fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm telling you, your mother's going to watch this, and you are going to get in such big trouble.
I'm really in trouble because my brother watches this.
I want you to report back.
Wow.
We're already taking bets now. We're already getting the Santa outfits for the baby. Getting them in the mail, like as gifts from my mom.
I love Santa.
Yeah.
Santa's wonderful.
I like the story of Santa. I'm not such a big fan of the lying to your kids kind of thing.
Not lying to your kids.
We're so going to get so much email about this, by the way. I'm getting us into such big trouble.
Google molests Santa, but you kill him.
Hey, mister from another sister. Wow.
You don't believe in me.
Do you believe in this, Google? I got a present for you right here. Little Gina, come sit on my lap.
Lying is a very strong word, and I absolutely don't judge anyone else who believes in Santa or teaches their kids about Santa. It's just not, it won't feel right.
Gina backs up.
No. You can do whatever you want. She's your child. You can screw her up in any way you choose. That's the beauty of parenthood.
That's true. And I'm sure in 3 years I will have given in. She'll be like, Mom, I want to believe in Santa. I'll be like, all right, if that's what you want, let's do it.
She's going to be that little weird kid in Montessori who's telling all the other kids, you know.
Yeah.
No, but that's the rule. One of the rules of the game is that you don't pretend that like he's real.
Good.
Because, you don't want your kid to be the one telling other kids that he's not real.
Is Santa an algorithm?
I'll take a break, and then we're going to come back with our tip, tool, and number. I knew there was one thing. Number, tip, and tool of the week. But first, a word from Ford. This is also a commercial using my likeness. And the likeness of my new vehicle. I've already ordered my Ford Fusion. I got the. I've been waiting for the plug-in hybrid, which comes out next month.
Wow!
Yeah, I'm really excited. So I have a Mustang. I have an eight V8. It's a little bit of. It likes gas. It's a lot, and it's really fun to drive. And it's kind of a muscle car. So I thought, okay, I've been driving that for a few years. Time to drive something a little more economical. Make up for it.
Are you going to trade it in?
No, Lisa's getting it. And she has a lead foot, so it's really not. It's a net loss. But what I want is the 2013 Ford Fusion Energy, which is their plug-in hybrid. And also, it is loaded with technology. One of the reasons Ford advertises on Twit is because they know you guys are geek fanatics, or gadget fanatics, and you're just going to flip over what the stuff this car, like the Bliss with the cross traffic alert. This is the blind spot information system. What it does, you have two radar, this is talking about autonomous vehicles, radar detectors in left and right rear bumper that detect traffic in the side lanes that you can't see. It's a blind spot. It lights up a little thing on your mirror there and does a little audio tone saying there's somebody in your blind spot. Don't change lanes. It's useful also when you're pulling out of a parking space you can't see around. It lets you know there's oncoming traffic, the cross traffic alert. I just love this kind of stuff. It also has the active park assist. Now, this is an autonomous vehicle thing. Watch this. This is so cool. So you say, I want to park. You're driving around in Brooklyn. It looks at spaces till it can see one that you fit into. And then it goes, okay, got it. Pull forward. And then you pull forward. And then you take your hands off the wheel, your foot off the accelerator. Keep your foot on the brake. This was my mistake. Keep your foot on the brake. And you let it go. And it does this very smoothly and beautifully. In less than 24 seconds, it, without touching the wheel, it perfectly parallel parks.
That freaks me out.
That's an autonomous vehicle. Now, the reason you keep your foot on the brake is because you're still in idle. And so, I did not know this. I learned. Once you've parked, you turn off the key, but you don't just sit there and go, wow, because the car will continue to roll into the car behind you, which is exactly what happened to me. But I was so blown away. I was literally, I would suggest when you get your new car with the active park assist, your new Ford vehicle, that you do this in a parking lot somewhere or something, just a couple of times, because the wow factor is, I mean, this is really what happened to me. It was like, I can't believe what just happened. The car drove itself. It parked itself, which is amazing. I can go on and on. There is so much cool stuff built into these new Ford vehicles. You could take a look at Ford.com/technology or drive one at a Ford dealer. Just go to your Ford dealer. Say, I want the 2013 Ford Taurus and the 2013 Ford Fusion. Both have these technologies available. Go further in your Ford. I'm excited. I can't wait. I don't know when I'm going to get it, but I'm very excited.
Hey, Leo.
Yeah.
With a plug-in hybrid, does the gas engine ever turn the wheels, or does it always just recharge the electric and the electric always turns the wheels?
So you only use the gas engine when it needs to. When you either exceed the range, I've heard, I don't know, it was about 35 miles.
Right.
Or you want to go faster, you don't want to go on the freeway like 60, you need enough power to go 62, I think, or something like that.
So it will directly power the transmission.
Yeah. So you're driving around electric unless the gas is needed for power at a higher speed, or you run out of battery. So the idea is, as I'm driving around, I don't drive more than 30 miles a day ever, unless I go into town or but almost every, 9 times out of 10, I'm just driving to the studio or doing the groceries or doing some errands. All of that will be on electric. So in effect, you get, pretty good mileage.
Unlimited.
Yeah.
What you just showed there, though, that looked like an SUV.
That's the Edge. The Edge does it. I did it in the Flex. It's, you know what's great? They're putting these technologies in almost all their cars. Mm. So I'm going to get it in the Fusion. But yeah, I think that was the Edge, or was it the Escape that they're doing that in? I can't tell.
Oh, probably, okay.
Looks like the Edge. The Edge is very high tech. A lot of these features. And it was in the Flex. Which color should I choose? I'm trying to decide which color. That's the hybrid.
Santa Claus red.
Should I? I have a bright red Mustang right now. And I take great pride in the fact that I have only been pulled over a few times in my bright red Mustang. I think Lisa will get more tickets than I.
The green is bad.
No, the green I don't like.
Yeah.
What do you think, Chad?
I don't know. If you think that's green, I thought it was a golden sort of color.
Yeah.
But you don't like
it? It's hard to tell. Maybe just the as we're streaming it, it's not quite so.
Yeah. That could be, yes.
Yeah. Red does look nice.
Black.
The Fusion Energy, though, you're not looking at the right. See, I don't know if they'll have this. Fusion Hybrid.
You're right. I went to cars, I need to go to Fusion Energy.
The one I'm on is the Energy Plug-in Hybrid.
Yeah.
That's the one I want. I'm so excited.
Gallery.
And then I'm going to get the 240-volt outlet in my garage because it'll charge in just a few hours.
And can you use this? Some people were using their Nissan Leafs to power their houses in the sandy blackout. Honest to God.
That's interesting. I bet I could.
You could reverse it, basically. Yeah.
You could reverse it. I don't know. I'll have to ask Ford. What a good idea. What a good idea. Anyway, Ford.com/technology.
You know what you forgot, boss?
What?
Change log.
It's time for the play the trumpets. Change log.
Change log.
There's a change right there.
And now Gina Trapani with what's new? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, my God. As soon as we played the trumpets, she dropped off.
I don't know. Didn't you hear me okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Change
okay.
log. I heard you say change log and then you disappeared.
Wait, I'm using the wrong camera. Sorry. I don't know what happened. Skype.
Skype new. By the way, Google, if you want to make a Skype replacement, Hangouts is not it. But if you want to make a Skype replacement that uses that technology, we'll use it. Because Skype is getting worse and worse.
I don't know what just happened. It was perfect timing, though. It was just during the bug part of the changelog video.
I'll tell you while you're fixing that, I'll play the video of me crashing the Flex. Somebody posted this on YouTube. See, we had camera crew in there with me.
I'm looking for a place to park. I'm going to stay pretty close here because apparently that's what I did wrong last time. Searching.
It's really kind of amazing.
Oh, hey, space found. Pull forward.
Because this is a big, this is a fairly big vehicle. This is
yeah, maybe you shouldn't broadcast and drive the next time.
Remove hands.
Well, no. So there are engineers sitting. I'm on the Ford test track.
Right.
And there's like a Fiesta behind me, and there's guys sitting in it. And I think they set me up because they said, oh, yeah, just go ahead. And I think they wanted me to crash because they were laughing. Anyway, watch this. This is so cool. I take my hands off the wheel.
Oh no, that can't be possible.
And it's really kind of mind-boggling when it does it.
You know, there's other cars here. Yesterday I
look at that. I'm not doing anything.
Wow, it doesn't
boom. Boom. But, you rear-ended yourself.
Wait a minute, watch. I forgot to. And they're laughing. They're howling, these two guys in the back.
I thought I was going to do the whole thing automatically.
You know, it's very slow. I'm not moving very fast. It's just it's idle. So there was no damage to either vehicle, which is very relieved, by the way, because I thought they're never letting me on the test track again. All right, are we fixed?
Am I fixed?
Change log, yes.
Yes. Awesome, change log. Biggest Google launch this week was Google Maps for iPhone, which
yeah!
we didn't really get to talk about very much. It's awesome.
We're saving it for the change log.
Yep. Traffic, turn-by-turn navigation, transit directions, walking directions, satellite view, street view, indoor photos, Zagat restaurant reviews. It's awesome. And I think we had another story in the rundown here that we didn't get to, which was like iOS 6 adoption, you know, shot up like
29%. People who had iPhones were holding off. Because they didn't want to use the dangerous. In fact, we have studio audience. They're nodding. They're going, yeah, we didn't want to upgrade. That's amazing.
That was a huge release. Really, really happy about that.
Now, it's funny because Google did said, well, we're not going to put turn-by-turn into your map, Apple. So they did it when they released theirs. They did.
Yep.
And there is a workaround. Some people don't know this. But, you know, when you say to Siri, take me, you know, to La La Land, it will launch Apple Maps.
That was my tip.
We'll save that because Gina's going
to
explain how you can get around that.
Yeah. So Google Maps for iPhone, awesome. Get it. New YouTube capture app for iPhone as well. It's a free app. It lets you record movies from within the app or import them from your camera roll. This is YouTube capture for iOS. And then you can do basic edits on your clips and upload them to YouTube, Google+, Facebook, or Twitter. So it expands the options behind the single option that Apple offers to share.
That's neat.
So YouTube Capture. And it's weird. If you search for YouTube Capture in the App Store, it's like the third result. So just page over and you'll find it. Google Music gets the scan and match feature in the U.S. This feature was available in the U.K. for a while, but now it's coming to the U.S. Basically, Google scans your local music library when you use Google Music and makes a song that matches instantly available in the cloud, so no upload required. And a feature similar to iTunes Match, and it was only available in Europe, but it's coming to the U.S. starting today, I believe. Hallelujah. And that was yesterday.
Of course, yeah. I've already uploaded all 39 gigabytes of my music, but that's all right.
Right. Google Plus, new mobile apps for both iOS and Android had been released with a few new features. On Android, Google's offering full-size backups of your photos up to 5 gigabytes free.
Yay.
In addition to the standard size option, that's unlimited free storage at 2048 pixels. And to give it a try, you turn on instant upload and you start taking pictures and your photos that you shoot will be saved in a private album on Google+.
You have to opt into that, Gina, on the photos? What's the default?
Yeah, you have to turn on instant upload. So I think you get prompted when you first install it to turn on instant upload.
Well, I already have it on. So is it going to go to full-size photo automatically or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, okay. It goes automatically. Photospheres also come to the mobile stream inside the Google Plus app. So you'll need Android 4.2 to create the 360-degree panoramas Jelly Bean, which we talked about in an earlier show. But any Froyo or later user can see them in the Google Plus stream. A couple other little features, low bandwidth hangouts work better, easier event messaging, and a better hangouts on air experience. So basically just Google trying to get out their last Google Plus updates of the year. Blogger got some Plus integration. You can Plus mention brands and people in your Blogger posts, and that will alert those people, notify those people if you share your Blogger posts then on Google Plus. So we see the Plusification of Blogger starting to happen there. And finally, Google Play Books got a read aloud and a few other features. Reed, I actually haven't gotten a chance to try this because I found this while the show, I think it got released today. I found it during while the show was airing. But Lifehacker reports that the Read Aloud feature sounds really robotic, more than Siri and other voice command prompts, but it gets a job done. So it's not as polished as maybe some other Read Aloud, pay for Read Aloud services, but it's free.
Did you mention the mood button in Google Plus?
No. What's the mood button?
Oh, you iPhone users don't have that. See, I could select a mood,
like
and post it on Google Plus. Love.
Back to the early days of MySpace. Eh?
Yeah. This is so horrible.
Yeah, it is.
But it doesn't matter because it's great. And then I'm gonna send this to all the twits. And then what it does is it makes it like little animated posting.
This is the end of the world.
Tony is having a bad day. Brian Burnett's not feeling well. He's one of our TDs. So apparently the Twit staff really took to this big time.
So when you compose a post, there's an option for
mood. I don't think that's on the iPhone version. In fact, you see they've changed it on. This is the Google Plus. They have these buttons now. This really looks almost like Instagram. Photo, check-in, mood, right? They really want to make it all-in-one. This is an all-in-one app now on Android.
Yep. Yeah, this is not on iOS. And in fact, I'm switching back to Android full-time.
Yeah, you better, given your new gig.
You know, I've been using the iPhone and then the Nexus 7, so I never really switched away from Android, but I'm upgrading my app. And truthfully, taking pictures of the baby, they come out a little better with the iPhone. But I'm going to switch back to the Galaxy Nexus full-time. So I've been figuring out
Twitter. You got me to open it, and I regret it, but I'm liking the Nexus 4.
I'm thinking I might Nexus 4 is a little all about Android.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you have to use an Android phone if you're going to host that show. So here's my Google Plus anime. It really is polluting the Google Plus stream. That's
really
ridiculous.
Is.
That is huge.
It's ginormous.
God.
Or something.
What? It's like a giant thumb or something. I don't really get it.
You know, it would have been better if they had little Androiders.
Yeah, Androids doing it. Robots. Everybody loves the Android robot.
But you know, all of this, it's for the kids. They're doing it for the kids.
I don't know if you saw the post some time ago from a Googler. You know those little stickers you have on the back of the car: mom, dad, sonny, daughter, and the dog. There's an Android version of that.
Oh, I like that. I want that one.
Is that great?
I'll take that.
You have a mom Android, a dad Android, a boy Android, and a girl Android.
I have to admit that with the changes they're making with the new apps, which are really nice, even on the iPhone and the communities, I am more and more thinking Google Plus is actually kind of the place to be.
Oh!
News! Yeah.
No, I really like it. I'm liking it a lot.
This is big news, Leo, that's the first time you've said something nice about Google News. Google Plus.
Well, not the first time. I liked it when it began, but I just kind of know all my friends slowly dribbled away.
Flip-flopped a little.
The communities have been great. We have 5,208 in this.
Yeah, by the way, Gina, have you joined the Twig community so I can make you a moderator?
Yes, I have.
Okay, I got to look. I got to find you. That's one problem. Now finding you is going to be difficult. Leo, did you join?
I will accept your invitation, Jarvis, right now. Talk cloud with us. You could see Jeff and Gina from the album art there, and that's nice.
By the way, Gina, the way the album art thing works, there's no way I could not cut off your name.
Oh, that's
Gina
okay.
Trappa.
Well, I apologize.
But if you go full on it, I think you see the.
That's fine.
Yeah,
I know.
That's completely fine.
So join our community. Yeah, you just it's called Twig.
Been there. It's a good place to give us. I added some links. Not that we got to them because we went on for so long about Santa Claus. But I added some links to the rundown thanks to stuff I saw in the community.
Who knew the big
the reggae mashup is
reggae
in
mashups in there. Yeah. Who knew that the Santa story would be the big story of the week? Anyway, that concludes the Google changelog.
Thank you, Chad.
I hope you negotiated themes for All About Android, Gina.
Oh, well, yeah.
I'm trying not to come in all gangbusters. You know, Jason was really nice and said, well, you know, if you have any suggestions, something we could do better or whatever. And, you know, you don't want to be the new person who comes in and is like, we need themes, but I'm hoping I can kind of.
We actually already have themes.
Yeah. Jason, is actually the king of that stuff for TNT. So I have a feeling you would be more than welcome. I want you to come in gangbusters. I want you to put your stamp on that show, Gina.
Yeah.
I do.
All right.
We're going to rename it Gina Trapani's All About Android.
No.
Featuring Gina Trapani.
With Gina Trapani.
With Gina
Special
Trapani.
Co-host, Gina Trapani.
Yeah, we have a lot. Here's one of the intros that we do on that show.
Hardware.
And then we have one for news as well.
Now, they have no words, so they're just sounders?
Yeah, no, it's just audibles.
It's good. I like it.
Great. Yeah. It's great.
And one of your stories I want to see that's on our log is... Why no Nexus accessories? Google it can do everything well in the world, but it can't do product and retail. I want to get that cool recharger for this thing. Hmm. I want things for my Nexus 4. Hmm. Nothing. Want a keyboard for it. Hmm. Nothing.
I'll show you a nice case from 10 Tera. These guys made a Nexus 7 case. It's really nice, out of wood.
Huh?
It's a wood case. They don't make one for the Nexus 4, though.
So here's the question. If I got myself a Note 2, does it replace the Nexus 7 and the phone?
No.
No. Okay.
Maybe, but no.
What do you use, Danny?
I usually carry around the Galaxy Nexus and the iPhone 5. Those are like my main day-to-day phones. And I've been using the iPad mini a lot for tablet.
I like the Note 2. It's just a little smaller than the Mini, actually.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's and I've tried the Galaxy S3. I just thought it was too big, but I keep it's funny. I just moved, and I was unpacking a whole bunch of stuff, and I came across my Google developer's phone from I.O. like 2009. It was so small, and I thought, maybe I need to reconsider what I consider to be a too big phone. But actually, I was thinking about the Galaxy Nexus because the 4, well, I have one because they gave them out to the press as part of the review process. It's not LTE.
Right.
And I'm thinking, well, I'm about to go a whole year on the Galaxy Nexus, and I'll probably stay on the Galaxy Nexus for another year because it's a perfectly functional Android phone with LTE, and I don't see any really good alternatives out there. I really wish that they had made the 4 with LTE. It makes me sad.
Yeah,
and I wish they would come out with a better email client for Android. I just want to kill them.
Really?
Oh, you're not a Gmail guy?
No, like I said, I like to have my email where the messages are discrete and individual, but I like to have them grouped, and that's what the iPhone does with their email client, and that, more than anything else, is what has caused me to shift to using the iPhone more, is because I get LTE and I get decent email and I get GPS. Now I get GPS with both of them. So, for
follow
me,
the
iPhone got strengthened. But but Android's very good.
I agree. I'm a big Jelly Bean fan.
I love it.
Yep.
I'm living I'm not looking back.
On Windows Phone, better than both of them, is that on a Windows Phone, you can, if you're in the Twitter client, you can, if you do a search, you can pin that search to your home screen, and then you just click on the tile, and it automatically brings up, say, all the mentions of Leah Laporte on Twitter, and it pulls it up. And there's nothing like it for Android or iPhone that I found.
Hmm.
So if you have that unique need, Windows Phone.
Deck would do something like
That's
that,
a
right?
good pick.
Well, here's the funny thing, by the way. Today's news, which we didn't get to because we were busy with Santa, but the news that Google and Apple and RIM bought the Kodak patent.
Yes, for half a billion dollars.
RIM?
Well, RIM probably threw in a couple of bucks and some free phones.
It threw them along for the ride, just as they were begging on the street corner or somewhere in Canada.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. Well, RIM's stock has been going up. They might have some cash.
Really? Yeah. Who the heck?
Danny, do you want to give us a tip or a tool?
I will. I'll give you the tip, and I wrote about it on Marketing Land today, which is Google-related, although it's about Twitter. Twitter made it possible for you to download all of your own tweets. They've been saying they were going to do this for ages, and I was like, yeah, who cares? What I want to do is be able to search through my tweets that I can't get through because you only let us search through the past week worth of stuff. And I was amazed. It's not just that you download it, but after you download it and open up the zip file, you click on a little index file that's in there. It's really easy to do. And it brings up a whole interface to all your tweets you've ever done. You can go month by month and easily click to a particular month and see all the tweets that you've done in that particular month. And on top of that, there's a working search functionality where you can go through, do a keyword search, and find whatever tweets you've done mentioning particular words and go then from that listing right to them live on Twitter. It is a real boon if you ever have to go back into your Twitter account to find things. And it makes up for the fact that, you know, Twitter and Google used to have a deal, and that used to be how a lot of us, I think, who were trying to search Twitter used to do it, which was to go to Google. And since that deal collapsed about 2 years ago, it's been kind of a mess. So this is a really nice benefit to come along. It's much more than I was expecting. Really nice.
Where is this? I'm on my Twitter account.
I don't have it yet. It's still rolling out, so you might not have it yet, Leo.
If you go to Marketing Land and you don't see it, I've got a bunch of screenshots in there that will show you what will happen. It's the third story down on our site. But, yeah, if you're not seeing it, I got lucky. Maybe they enabled my account along with everybody else. I didn't know it was coming today, but I went in and I looked, and there it was. If you go into Settings and you have it, you'll see somewhere in Settings down near the bottom it'll say Request Your Archive. And you click on that. You'll get a little email that comes back to you. You follow on the email, and then you can do the download. And then you get the little zip file, and then away you go, and you start searching. And then I did a follow-up.
I'm really surprised that they didn't add functionality around that themselves, but that's an opportunity for you, Gina, eh?
Well, yeah, and I know you did a call. You did a call for developers to help you write an importer, right?
Yeah. My community around ThinkUp is really excited about this, and we're working on an importer so you can download this archive and then suck it into ThinkUp. I mean, you know, I started building ThinkUp because I wanted to archive my tweets, and I honestly didn't ever think that Twitter was going to make this functionality available. I started building ThinkUp. It used to be called Twitalytic in like 2009. So I've been literally hoping for this feature for 3 years or almost 4 years. So I'm really happy about it. Yeah, we're building an importer now so that you can import your archive, and then my hope is to, you know, give users the ability to see you know, different insights and stats, and also search. But I didn't realize that it comes with a keyword search functionality. That's cool. Really cool, Danny. I'm glad they did that.
It must be it's an HTML file. I mean, how are they doing this in HTML5?
I honestly don't know how they're doing it. It was a second take when I went back and I realized that they had the search thing. And I did a follow-up thing on Search Engine Land that goes through it a bit more on how the search functionality works. But I don't know if they're doing a JavaScript index or they're doing something.
Yeah, it must be a JavaScript thing.
You had to install. It was all there. It takes a moment where it's clearly running through it, but boy, it runs
and
through
it. But it's running in the browser, right?
Yeah.
So, Gina, do you know what the format is? Is it an XML file? Do you know what you'll be getting?
You get that viewable in your browser HTML version, but then you also get a CSV, which is important to any spreadsheet, and then you also get JSON feed, which is great for developers, and that's probably what we'll use to import into the ThinkUp data structure.
Make it very easy to scrape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
What's your tip of the week? I think I know because I tipped it off.
Usually you ruin the number. This week you ruined it.
I didn't. It turned it into a tease.
Yeah, so the new Google Maps app for iOS is awesome, but all the hooks into mapping functionality on iOS goes to the Apple Maps app. However, I found this on Lifehacker. If you want Siri to give you directions using the Google Maps app, you have to add the phrase via transit to the end of your Siri voice command. So instead of saying, take me to the nearest insert destination here, say, take me to the nearest gas station via transit. And that apparently will launch the Google Maps iOS app. Now, I haven't had a chance to try this out. Did you get a chance to try this out, Leo? There's a video on the...
Yeah, it works. But it launches transit directions.
It launches transit on Google Maps.
It would do whatever, because Apple knows there's no transit in Apple Maps, it would launch whatever you had for transit directions. And, of course, Google Maps is registered for that. So you'd have to then, I mean, you're now in the transit section, but I guess you could just tap a button and go into the driving section.
Right.
Yeah, it's good. It's cool. It's a good hack to know. This guy's got a nice desktop, too, I must say.
Via transit.
All right, moving right along.
Have you played with Udder on the Android yet, Gina?
I haven't. Is it a Twitter client?
It's no. It's a. Sorry, let me try it again.
Udder. I have to.
Udder away, Jeff.
Is it reading your mail?
Open Gmail.
Fire away, Jeff.
Open Gmail.
Open Gmail.
That kind of thing. I mean, I haven't played with it enough yet, but it's a very nice Siri replacement.
Installing right now. It's from Brandall.
It's in a beta.
Yeah, beta version.
Beta.
Beta.
Better.
There's quite a few of those.
Yeah, now. This one looks nice.
Nuance has one also that's in beta, because everybody uses Nuance for the recognition. What is your number, Mr. Jeff Jarvis? It's utter, U-T-T-E-R, like utter a word.
Utter, not cow-like.
Not utter.
Utter. I want to do two quick plugs. Today, I got out of nowhere, I got this invitation on Google Plus from Google Community in New York, and they said, we're having a burger get-together, and so I went along to this place, this burger place down 40th Street near me, and there's a dozen people, two or three from Google, the rest just Google Plus users. And I didn't know that Google Plus did this. And they said, oh, yeah, we've gone on pizza tours of Brooklyn, and we've gone on, and Google, and you pay for your own burger. It's not a freebie or anything, you know. You got a little swag if you want. But it was a really nice thing. It's amazing. Huge, gigantic Google has these nice little relationships with people. I thought that was very cute. Doesn't scale. People don't. But I thought it was nice. But that's not a number. Also want to mention real quickly that Google is funding journalism scholarships, so look it up, my fellow journal wonks. I would do the number one trending Google search for health, it turns out last week, is hemorrhoids, but that wouldn't be a very nice way to end the show. So I will mention that the EFF's good work in patent fixing just got $500,000, half from Mark Cuban and half from a game developer Notch person. So God's work, guys.
Notch is Minecraft.
It's Notch. He's like a saint.
He's a god.
Well, my kids are fascinated by him.
Yes, if you're a Minecraft fan, you know who Notch is. We don't have to explain that one.
I just showed somebody
Minecraft.
I showed somebody a post today, a Swedish reporter who's very nice, Katarina Anderson, was in my office doing a story for her media show back in Stockholm, and I was talking about the early days of Twitter and Andy Carver and all that, and early on, and I showed her a post I did from 2008, which I had to say Twitter, comma, a microblogging service that allows people to do this and that. It was kind of cute that I had to explain
what
Twitter was back then.
That has changed. You don't have to explain it anymore. Now you explain what Twitter is.
That what explains us.
Yeah. So I have two tips for you. One's a quickie. If you're moving from Instagram over to Flickr, there's a instaport.me. Will very straightforward. I mean, this is an API to do this. You authorize your Instagram account. You authorize your Flickr account. You can download your images from Instagram, but you can also move them over to Flickr. I did that. It creates a set called Instagram, and all of your pictures are there. Now, I didn't shut down my Instagram account, but now I have my Instagram pictures on Flickr, which is nice. And there's quite a few
of them.
That is
nice.
Yeah.
Freethephotos.com does it as well.
That's the one I meant. Now, Instaport does not do that. It's Free the Photos. Thank you. I said the wrong one. Yeah, freethephotos.com. Very straightforward. It will send you an alert when it's done, and then they do not save the images. It's just probably a little JSON conversation. My other one, though, is important for anybody using a Samsung Galaxy S3 or a Galaxy Note. There is a hole, pretty big one, in the Exynos 4 processor and the Samsung kernel code. And it lets any app hack your phone. So you should be very careful until this is patched. Samsung's acknowledged it. They say they're working and have a patch very quickly. It does give you an advantage, though. If you have one of the affected phones, it makes it very easy to root the phone because you can use the same exploit. So there are patches to this. If you have a Galaxy S2, S3, International, the US S3s are safe. A Galaxy Note or Note 2. There are some issues with the camera because the exploit takes advantage of the graphics subsystem on the Exynos processor. And so fixing the exploit actually can break the camera in some cases. But my recommendation is to get Chainfire's app, which is available at xdadevelopers.com. It's called Exynos Abuse. It's an APK, so you literally just download it and install it. You have to turn on third-party apps. And once you've installed it, it's great. It's a one-click root for the affected phones. Makes it very easy to root. And I've used Chainfire software, so I have nothing, you know, I can't guarantee you this is safe because I don't know JFire, but I've used his software before. He's a reputable developer in the root community for Android. And when you do the exploit, what's nice is you then, the root exploit, you've rooted your phone very simply. I rooted my Galaxy Note 2 from Sprint here, but you also have a checkbox to disable the exploit. You even have this, which is nice. You can unroot the device, which is really great because if you want to do OTA updates, you'll need to unroot. So I'm sure Samsung will have an OTA update, but until then, either be very careful about where you get your apps from, because if you have one of the affected phones, it's pretty trivial to take over the phone. As you can see, this is a one-click root exploit like that. Exynos abuse at XDA developers. It's a long thread, a long link, but the thread number is 2050297. Maybe that'll make it a little easier for you to find it. Boy, this was a fun and long show, and I am so glad you were here as the expert on Santa tracking, Danny Sullivan.
It's amazing.
Who knew? Who knew?
I'm sure I'll grow out of it at some point.
or your kids will. But we actually planned that. That's why we had you on the show. We knew that would be a big story. You could find Danny's work at Search Engine Land, and not just Search Engine Land. Now you also have
Marketing Land. We just had our first birthday.
Happy birthday to MarketingLand.com. Always great to talk to you, Danny. You're the greatest. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Jeff Jarvis.
A Christmas tradition, I think, Danny.
It's a great thing to have Danny on anytime we can, any time of the year. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. Look for his book, Public Parts, available everywhere fine books are sold or on Google Plus in the new Twig community. That's a good place to say hi. Same thing for Gina. Gina Terpani at smarterware.org, our new host on All About Android starting next month.
Woo-hoo!
Now, we are taking next week off. It's a best of, thanks to all of you who submitted and our editors who chopped it up. So we'll have a best of this week in Google next week, December 26th. The following Wednesday, both Jeff and Gina are out of town or something. They're tied up. But we have some guest hosts. Drew Olenoff will join me. Who else?
We're talking to Kevin Marks. Aaron Newcomb.
Great. Thank you very much.
Full cast.
Great to have you all.
Don't forget us.
I won't Wally Pip you, I promise. They'll be back on, that would be January 9th, I guess, will be the next episode.
Yep.
Thanks, guys. Great to talk to you. Happy holidays. Christmas to you. Enjoy your aluminum pole, Ms. Grinch. I hope you get a coal in your... Do you put stockings up?
We actually do have stockings up.
Nobody's going to come fill them. Just going to be empty.
We don't have a chimney, Leo. Come on.
You don't need a chimney. Santa's magic. I figured it out. He uses quantum mechanics. He actually takes 6 months to deliver, but thanks to relativity, he's able to do it in a second.
Do it in a second.
It's physics. It's science. And he'll be here in 4 days, 10 hours, 35 minutes, and 10 seconds, according to Google. So there. Counting down. You'll see Ms. Grinch. Oh, we're never going to let her forget that one.
Oh, man. I'm going to regret this.
You do believe in the tooth fairy, though, right?
Well, of course.
Okay. Clearly. Just checking.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. You want those quarters.
But the Easter bunny is pretty weird.
I don't know.
But the Easter bunny is kind of weird.
It's a little strange.
Yeah.
That's a weird one. Yeah. You know, you should see. There's a movie you should see. The Guardians movie.
Rise of the Guardians.
You should see this and then see how you feel about all of that. Seriously. Take Etta. She's not too young.
All right.
It's DreamWorks, so it's got to be good. Thank you all for joining us. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 2200 UTC now on twit.tv. But if you miss the episode, you can always watch after the fact. On-demand versions available at twit.tv and wherever finer podcasts are aggregated. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. Have a great holiday. We'll see you next year on Twit.